So you got Ron, yeah. So you got George Bush Senior for actually, you got him for 12 years.
Well, concerning these Starry Night images, George Bush Senior, he's on the way here. He ties into this because the New World Order speech is around 1990-1991.
Are you saying the old man is also somewhat prophesied in a sense? Because he did give that speech, yes. He gave the Points of Light speech, and he gave the New World Order thing a couple of times, too, right?
Well, I know of three New World Order speeches, and I guess there's in September 11th, 1991, the third one of which I'm aware.
Right.
The content, the whole concept of the New World Order for me is it's a, I don't like the phrase Antichrist, but it is just a completely... It's a concept of let's just do away with anything but having Satan as our leader. Forget all those notions. Satan is going to rule the universe. So that's what it seems to be. So on September 11th, 1991, there's this eerie occurrence with Mercury that just seems to tie into the content of his message and the whole concept of the New World Order. So I guess if you look at the September 11th 3BC slide again, it is the... It's the moon. It's the new moon that actually pins the date and Martin specifies the time in the evening at September 11th, 3 BC. It's the position of the new moon at Virgo's feet there. New moon representing a new beginning. And the date, September 11th, 3 BC, turns out to be in the Jewish calendar. It was, he mentions Tishri 1, and I'm not that familiar with the Jewish calendars, but that is the Jewish New Year day.
Okay, and now...
The position of the moon is important, too, a little bit later, or it seems to be.
All right, and I'm looking at frame 3.
This is frame 3, September 11th, 3 BC.
All right, now what I'm looking at, if we can use the sun as a fixed point for us. If you go down slightly, down and off to the right, what are we seeing there? Is that the new moon?
No, off to the left, under her... Toward Libra, under her feet. Under the green line to the left, under her feet, it's a new moon, so it's just
a thin crescent.
You can barely see it. But
I'm sorry. Yes, I do. But can I ask you, what is that? What are those like faded orbs that we see down and off to the right a little bit of the sun?
I don't know if it's probably a deliberate software feature. It's just probably supposed to simulate the optical feature that happens when the sunlight hits the camera. I'm assuming that's what it is. I don't know. It's not relevant to anything.
Or it isn't,
not a planet,
okay,
or anything. It's just something from the sun. I don't know why it's even in the soft. Why it shows,
all right,
up for sure.
Okay. But now I do see the moon. I understand. Okay. Got it.
So keep in mind, the sun is mid-body to Virgo. The woman clothed, from Revelation 12, the woman clothed with the sun. So Virgo is clothed with the sun and the moon at her feet. But it's a new moon and a crown of 12
right.
stars upon her head, which I don't have shown because it causes a bit of a mess. But I put Mercury and Venus in there because, although they're not that important to what Martin presents, I just put them there because they're part of what I call the Ackerman planets, and they seem to be involved. Certainly, Mercury and Venus are involved in other ways at other times. So, if you're ready, we can move on to the next one.
Sure.
Which is September 11th, 1991. This is the date of George Bush Sr.'s third World War, New World Order speech, of which I'm aware. His first one was September. It's beyond funny. It's beyond coincidence. September 11th, 1990 was the first one of which I'm aware. So this is roughly a month after the those contrived events. Saddam Hussein going into Kuwait. All that.
Right. Yeah. The false accounts of Iraq building up on the Kuwaiti border. Yeah.
How much was spontaneous and how much was capitalized upon after the event happened? I see most of all these major events though as contrived. I see very little spontaneity in major historical events.
Well, it should be noted, by the way, that there was a reporter from the St. Petersburg Times who called out Bush. I forget her name right now. I've done some shows on her. She's also one that found out that there were flights going in and out of Tampa Airport, private, in defiance. I wouldn't say in defiance because they were allowed to do it, of the moratorium of air travel right after 9/11. And the Tampa Airport denied it, and then they finally admitted it a couple of years later, and she was the one that broke the story, out of the St. Petersburg Times. Now, she's the one also who got a look at that disputed border, if you will, what was going on there between Kuwait and Iraq, and it was off a Russian bird, I think, that she got this image and published it and went with the story, and that is there was no buildup whatsoever of Iraqi troops on the Kuwaiti border. It was all baloney. And what was really interesting about the fact, and I thought this is just incredible, is that that shot that was captured was so defined that to the west in the Sahara, you could still see the old tank tracks from Rommel's tank brigade, if you will. Pretty good stuff. So, yes, that's right.
From 1990, you could still see Rommel's tank tracks?
Yes. Yes, you could.
So you're talking about undisturbed
it was obvious that this was not roads or anything else, and that's how sharp the image was. And that's the one that she published, her paper did. And it's like, no, there's no buildup here, folks. So going along with what you were saying, Bush's pronouncement was not necessarily based on any kind of fact. It was, again, as I think you might be alluding to, the mark of another, I don't know, period you want to call it. I wouldn't say aeon or epoch, but, you know.
September 2001 was as consequential as I can think of. Yep. So here we are.
In 91 now, right?
September 11th, 1991, but I need to back up to September 11th, 1990. I don't have an image for it. I just was going to mention that. That's
okay.
The first speech of the first time. I'm sure the New World Order has been, who knows how many times it's been discussed previously, but George Bush Sr. was instrumental in this period of time. September 11th, 1990. 11 years to the day, exactly 11 years before the big show in 2001, he's giving a New World Order speech. So 1 year later, well, actually, earlier that year, it was either right before or I think it was right when he announced that Operation Desert Shield has now become Operation Desert Storm, and the air campaign has begun. I think he was on national TV addressing us, I believe, from the Oval Office, and that was another of his New World Order speeches where he mentioned, I got it written down somewhere, but it's not that important. But here we are at September 11th, 1991, his third New World Order speech, and boy, they love September 11th. Here we are, as in September 11th, 3 BC, you've got a new moon back at Virgo's feet.
Right.
So if you go back to the previous slide there, in 3 BC, September 11th, 3 BC, you've got the new moon at Virgo's feet.
All right, now when you say previous slide, use the date, okay? What's the previous slide you're referring to?
Well, you actually don't have to go back, so... I'm just saying, you've got it here on September 11th, 1991. You've got the new moon at Virgo's feet, which is the exact same occurrence as that of September 11th, 3 BC.
Let people know then we're going to frame four. That's what Ronald's referring to. Okay.
Okay.
And we have something that approximates what we saw in 2001.
Okay.
Okay.
So with that new moon back at Virgo's feet when Bush is giving his New World Order speech,
right.
Here you have Mars in the head area, not exactly at the head, but near the head area, which is not opposite, but it's Mars is taking the place of Mercury and Venus. Back in September 11th, 3 BC, when Jesus was born, Mercury and Venus were at her head area. But now here in 1991, Mercury, the messenger, is in conjunction with Jupiter, the king planet, which are there in conjunction with Regulus, the king's star. So just to me, the symbolism is just too eerie, you can't avoid it. Jesus, the lion of the tribe of Judah. So here we have Leo the lion, which contains the king's star Regulus, and you've got Jupiter, which I can't get away from the fact that it can represent Jesus or God. And here you have Mercury, the messenger. It seems to me it's a message is being sent 10 years to the day before the event of 9/11/2001, George Bush Sr. giving a New World Order speech. It seems a message is being delivered. I don't have a transcript of all of it right now, but it just seems it's too eerie, too coincidental.
That's where I was going to go for that word. Yeah. All right, and I'm just looking at this too, and just now. One quick aside, because you can never, ever try to capsulize what John Ackerman did. And I know that I think we did 4 or 5 hours together a while ago quite a while ago now. But the symbolism of Mercury as the messenger is actually based on some kind of planetary event. Was that Mercury breaking away from what was the planet Mars?
Well, see, here's the thing. Mercury is the former core of Mars. You had Periri Mars,
right,
which was the current Mars, plus Mercury, which was its core. They're in orbit, geostationary orbit above Earth during the dance encounters. At the end of a dance encounter period, when Venus would come back by and perturb them, Mercury would protrude, would be released. The core of Mars, the iron core, the solid core, would be released. It would travel around our planet. Mercury and Mars traveling in opposite directions, but Mercury would travel around our planet extremely fast, and that gave rise to the idea of a fast messenger from the gods.
Right, the one with the winged feet, right.
Mm-hmm. And they would recombine on about 8 days later. I don't remember the exact evidence he cites for the 8th day, but 8 days later, Mercury would be recaptured or reclaimed, or it would begin to be reabsorbed because it would come into contact again. And then the dance encounter has been broken off, and they move out into their planetary orbits at that point, or the combination of the core and the current Mars, which was what he called Periri Mars. They move away for 15 years before the next initiation, beginning of the next period, when they're brought back for another 15-year period. So Mercury is the solid core
inside
of Mars. Yes, now it is permanently separated. And I just interpreted it as a firm message of intended conflict or intended war being sent to Jupiter, to Jesus, to God.
Okay.
Announcing on September 11th, 1991, that the time is coming. We're getting ready. I hope you're getting ready because, you know, we're coming for you. Things like that. That's the way it seems to me.
Yeah.
And it's too tempting to think that, given I don't really – find myself trying to think the way they would think.
Yeah, exactly. That's
scary,
right.
Because I myself – I can think some pretty – I think there's a lot of filth in me that I notice that's brought to the surface at times, and I'm ashamed of it and turn away from it, and it makes you wonder, why is that even in me? How could I even think something like that or say something like that? But, you know, I have to remind myself that I'm not one of these people who is living their life in an effort to subvert, divert, pervert, whatever – to subdue.
Yeah.
I'm living my life in a battle against Jesus Christ.
No, you're not. Right. But I mean, when you say, how can it be in us? But it comes with the flesh. Literally, it comes with the flesh, which is unregenerated, and which is why we needed a Savior. So, I mean, the fact that it happens, you know, isn't necessarily untoward, but the fact that, you know, there is some compunction to want to obviously get free of it or get forgiveness for it, fine. But these folks, I mean, it's, you know, it's full throttle out. I mean, there is nothing good in them, and they're here for one purpose, and it's not necessarily for the edification and gratification of the herd. So, I mean, that's what we're dealing with. And, I mean, Ronald, I mean, that's a theme all the time. I mean, what we're dealing with, this whole new order thing, everybody's got to come down to the point where it's a spiritual thing. I don't care if you say you're agnostic or an atheist. Nobody's an agnostic. Nobody's an atheist. Everybody believes something, which is like basically, I don't want to believe in God. That doesn't make you an agnostic. It makes you, you know, something other than that. But we're coming down to this, and that's the only thing I can find. It straightened me out to a great extent, and it continues to do so. But if you're looking at this thing as some kind of like geopolitical, secular thing, forget about it. I mean, this is way beyond that.
You're never going to understand what's going on until you consider the esoteric, occult, or hidden.
Sure. And, I mean, even in your mainstream Christian churches, whatever that means, I mean, these people aren't even thinking about this. They actually think that everything they see on TV is real. And it's not. But they should know better, but they don't. I don't know where it said in Scripture, by all means, believe alphabet networks, which are, like we've said, part of the Prince of the Airwaves. And that's a real sad thing. So, you know, who's going to get fooled willingly? Who's going to be deceived? Well, guess what? And it's frightening even to think of that phrase in Scripture that says, you know, that the elect would be deceived. That's how bad it's going to be. They're not going to be, but it's almost as if they could. But the rest of everyone else are going to become completely unglued. Very, very ominous portents.
Unglued or unhinged, yeah.
All right, now look, I was just going to say this. To give it its due time, you have the 10 frames. Does it work out with what you're doing? You tell me right now, and we'll do whatever you say. Do you want to work into the fifth frame? Would that be a good point for us to stop with after you explore it? Or
I think we should do the fifth and sixth fairly quickly then.
You sure? Otherwise, we can just hold off and start it again, you know, in part B. It's whatever you want to do. But I don't want you to rush it because people, we really, I mean, all of us have to. I mean, it's been a while, you know, from my being removed from John's work. I mean, I don't think people have even read necessarily The Star That Astonished the World about Martins. So,
yeah. I'm still reading. I'm still studying myself. I mean, I'd like to get better at this. I mean, I've been in contact with John about a few things, and he's interested in my health, and I'm still learning. So I can understand you've I know you do a lot of shows, and you have a lot of guests you're working with, so that's understandable.
Well, here's the point. What John has shared, what Martin wrote about, what you're doing, is even for the longest Christian, I mean, the one who's been in the Spirit the longest, this stuff did not come around. I mean, this is, and also it's real, it's true. I mean, Ackerman was not anywhere, shape or form, you know, some kind of whack job. I mean, what he shares is also based on Scripture, and I mean, he did it so well. I mean, I remember talking to Randy Moggins about this and saying, you know, to interview him is daunting because it's something that is completely foreign to all our schemes. To think about a solar system that isn't concentric as we see it today, wow. I mean, I'd get to restructure a lot of wiring there. And but it is the truth, and that's why when you came along with this, and you know, and Eric was real good about aligning John and yourself with me, and I'm thankful for that. But like you even said, I mean, going back and dealing with Martin and dealing with Montgomery and what Montgomery had to share. It adds to a certain kind of support and affirmation and confirmation that what we're doing is not crazy. And all it takes is some time and some willingness to at least do some kind of research or discovery in this. And I don't, you know, I just see it as being a very supportive thing. But I tell you what, I mean, this is not everyone's usual mental regimen. So, you know, it's very, very foreign. And that's why I've even asked you, not only for my own education, but to again, people are going to be looking at this and they're going to try to keep up with it. And they, you know, they're not aware of Ackerman. They're not aware necessarily of Martin. So, you know, we're encompassing a lot. But if they were to get into all that, they would see that it is certainly, it makes a lot of sense and it's very harmonious. So, but anyway, I'll give way to you. Would you like to go into five and six now?
Yeah, we should just do those.
Okay.
Stop short of the others because it's probably better. You said we could even maybe go through them again later, so okay.
Well, what I would say is this. There's a point at which I'm not aware of, but you are, where you know that there's a better time to break off than another. So
okay.
We go into five and six. We can always begin the next show, if you want, with a reprise of five and six and an awful go. So, yeah, by all means, if you feel
all
that's
right.
Where it's at, then do it.
I got to briefly mention something on four. Here you have... September 11th, 1991, you have Venus between Cancer and Leo. Venus moving toward Leo from Cancer. It's below the ecliptic. I don't know if that's significant, but it's the transition, the point at which Venus is apparent in the sky. And 9/11/1991 seems significant because when you move forward to slide 5 or image 5,
yes,
this is where you have September 11th, 2001. And I actually have everything
that there
on,
is, right?
Maybe I should do this for all of them. I have everything on one picture here. So there you go with Mars on the left, Mars and Sagittarius, Jupiter and Gemini. The same occurrence as when it looks like John the Baptist was born. And John the Baptist, behold the Lamb of God, you know, the messenger, the one who was preparing the way for Jesus, announcing Jesus to the world.
All right, now, let me ask you this, okay? I'm trying to get this in my brain, which is, again, a daunting task. In a way, I mean, are you saying what you see is that Mercury in the sky as the messenger is symbolic of John the Baptist and his birth, and he acting as the messenger to say there was one coming after me. Is
that's
that true?
That's the way I see it, yes.
Wow.
And that's why it looks to me like Mercury is used in a profane, sacrilegious, or what do you call it? What's the more
occult
word?
Occult?
Occult, yes, but not just occult, but...
supernatural, spiritual, or...
I don't even like... I don't like the word blasphemous because I think of the...
Yeah,
you know, Caiaphas,
okay.
And those guys. Blasphemy, blasphemy. Satan using for evil what is meant for good.
For good.
The signs in the sky, we're not supposed to get all feathers ruffled about them. I mean, God saying, the Lord saying in Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 5. Nope, that's the wrong one. Never mind. Jeremiah chapter 10, where he's saying, do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathens are dismayed at them. So being dismayed, having your feathers ruffled, or having your panties in a wad over what's going on. I mean,
but with
this, I put it here to rejuvenate. What is going on now, folks, is to rejuvenate this planet. I don't really know exactly how to explain right now. I guess so.
But don't worry about the right terminology. Just spit it out while it's there in your brain.
Well, now I'm losing it.
All right, let me just throw something in here then. In that scripture, it said that who is dismayed?
Jeremiah chapter 10, I believe, verse 2. Do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven. These are the big bold letters. So this is the words of the Lord,
right,
talking to the Israelites. Do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathens are dismayed at them.
So that would necessarily mean that in time to come, when they saw this alignment, they kind of knew that John the Baptist would be on the scene, that he would be born.
Well, there was this cultural persistent memory that the dance encounters ended maybe 700 to 687 is the exact date, but about 700 B.C. was the final breakaway when Mercury left permanently thus far. And so then roughly 700 years later, around 3 B.C., there would be this... There would be this cultural memory. I mean, Mercury, you know, what was the transition between what people, the significance people gave to Mars, to Mercury, to Venus during the dance encounters, and then the significance they gave to them after the dance encounters when they were far away and they were no longer approaching? What was the transition like? These are questions I ask.
Okay,
myself.
All right.
I want to look into this. I don't really know exactly what questions to ask.
But now that we are in, well, we're not really in the season. We're in the season as the pagans have put us, because this is not, obviously December 25th is not the birth of Christ. However, since we, for most people, are somewhat in the mode of understanding what took place that day because of the scriptures, at least in the Gospels.
Yeah.
But isn't now thinking what you just said, that in Jeremiah the Lord states that the pagans will be dismayed by it, which means to me that there is a sign in the heavens that is positive for those who will believe on Jehovah and eventually on Jesus Christ. If they knew that John was on the way, that would be something to be dismayed at, if you will, by the evil side. But now take it further. If that occurred, and of course John the Baptist lost his head to a dancing girl, figure that out.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't say that, you know, in any shape or form of being glib, but, you know, that's another whole story. But the thing is, John the Baptist said, I'm ushering in someone else. He is the messenger, a precursor of Jesus Christ. And now here's where I'm going with this. So then on the alignment that would portend the birth of Jesus Christ, I'm assuming that the underworld knew that this was happening. And I don't know if it's fair to ask you this, but, you know, you get involved in this kind of like secularized portrayal of the nativity. But am I to understand that the three magi are actually magicians and not necessarily good guys? And did they not understand by the star that astonished the world that the Christ had been born? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Ernest Martin mentions that he refers to them as Gentile astrologers, but they had some, what exactly was it that motivated them? Possibly a conjunction of Jupiter and Venus in June 17th, 2 BC, that could have motivated them to head off, because they arrive in Jerusalem around they arrived to see Jesus around December 25th, 2 BC of our calendar, our Gregorian calendar. That's when they arrived. And so Christmas, the Nativity, well, that wasn't the Nativity. That was well after Jesus was a toddler at that point. But that's how it got mingled. That's the beginning of how Christmas got mingled with this, you know, the winter solstice, December 25th. This,
right.
That's how this got mingled, apparently,
but,
given Ernest Martin's timeline. But the Magi, he refers to them as Gentile astrologers. I know I've also heard that there are people thinking that they are, that they were descendants of Daniel, and that they're thus of Jewish descent, and they're specifically looking for their Messiah. You know, I don't know what to make of all that yet. This is, I can't get enough of this. These are historical issues that I like to read about and like to learn about.
What it does is, I mean, for those who needed some kind of assurance that this is true, you're right. When what we know spiritually through the Bible coincides or intermingles with what is secular history, I think it makes it even a more of a concrete case for the fact that Christ is certainly real, and what was stated about him is in fact true. I just remember, and I don't deal with this a lot, but I somewhere along the line I got the idea that the Magi were not necessarily good guys, if not necessarily bad guys, that they might have been spies, that they were magicians. Magi.
Well, the word I've heard the word magoi, M-O, I believe I pronounced it correctly, M-A-G-O-I, from where we get our word magician, so magi, magician.
Yeah, and
it makes sense.
And I know there's people out there who have the answer, and I'm sure after this audio goes out, I'll hear about it from people I respect, and that something to the effect that, you know, okay, they were not necessarily in any way, shape, or form an evil presence, let's say, on that day, but that he, in fact, witnessed it and went back and said, Christ is here. So, like I said, I'm sure I'm going to hear about it, but that seems to ring true with me, and we'll see if that's the case. But so there you have it. I mean, it's just fascinating, Mercury being the messenger, aligned with John the Baptist's birth, and both portending something that's greater coming.
Yeah, I think there's a big story there.
Wow.
I think I've got, I want to further solidify. This is just...
Sure.
You know, I've heard John Eckman say that he said a prayer, this is, Lord, this is what I'd like to do, referring to the work he was doing. Well, this is part of it. This is what I'd like to do. I'm sure this would just be a part of it, but this is what I'd like to do. I want to feel like by the time this body dies that that I have done something important or useful, meaningful in this life, other than go to work and go to bed and go to work and go to bed and go to work and go to bed. You know, I know you probably, I guess I should try to finish this quickly. This slide here is September 11, 2001. There you got Jupiter and Gemini, Mars and Sagittarius, same as early 3 BC.
But all right, again, let me just say, we're looking at five?
Let me count it. One, two, three, four, five, yes.
Okay.
No? What? I guess I can't count. Sorry, one, two, three, four. Five. Yes, five. The one with the big arc through the...
You got it. That's right. Okay. So, just so we get everybody literally on the same page. Okay.
I did graduate, so yes. I can count to five at least. I have all my fingers.
Yeah, but you're not factoring the blitheringness of me who muddles everything, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
Oh, Lord, that's great. Okay, so we're looking at five with the big arc. We got it.
And
what are we looking at?
It's just so... To me, this was one of the... First big connection. And when I saw the Patriot and Cornwallis says what he said, Jupiter, Mars, come boys, come. I came and looked at this. This is basically the screen I prepared, and I saw this and I thought, oh man, here we are. It's the reality, the real reality.
All right, now let me ask you, and you kind of spoke about this the last time around. Was this a configuration that was present on July 4th, 76, or at another date that was key?
Well, I can tell you a little about that in a minute. Yes, Jupiter and Gemini, July 4th, 1776. So, also keep in mind on May 1st, the big occult holiday that Adam Weishaupt, I read that he formed the Illuminati.
Yeah.
So, but here we are on September 11th, 2001, and okay, Jupiter and Mars. But then you've got what I think is extremely important here is Venus moving toward Regulus and Leo, and Mercury moving towards Bica. I haven't mentioned Spica yet, but I've got it there because it's important as well. Here's the messenger moving towards Spica on September 11th, 2001. And we can move forward to the next one, which would be 6. And maybe this is the last one.
All right,
one.
Hold on. Just before you go there, Spica is a star. Is that correct? It's
Spica
a star.
Spica is a star in Virgo. Okay. It's near the green line, near the ecliptic.
Got it. All right, now we can go to 6.
Mercury is headed toward it. This is September 11th, 2001. 6 days later, the next slide, September 17th, the sixth day, and then that movie, which I think is extremely pertinent with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Here you have Mercury even closer to Spica.
Spica, yep.
Because, well, Mercury is the closest to our sun, and its mass is so small relative to us, yes, it moves quickly. And Venus even closer to Regulus. Well, of course, you got Jupiter there in Gemini, and Jupiter moves so slowly through our sky, or its apparent motion is so slow through our sky that it's still in Gemini. Here on the sixth day, when Wall Street reopened, the sixth day put out by Phoenix Pictures, here you have Mercury the messenger bearing down on Spica. And let me mention what Ernest Martin has written in his book about Spica.
Okay.
He cites another researcher whose name was E.W. Bullinger. Bullinger's the last name, I believe, was E.W. Bullinger.
Okay.
And he's citing something that he got from Bullinger. Bullinger, in his book, The Witness of the Stars, said that the word Spica has, through the Arabic, the meaning the branch, and that it symbolically refers to Jesus, who was prophetically called the branch in Zechariah right. chapter 3, verse 8, and chapter 6, verse 12. And I read those, and, you know, it seemed a bit, it wasn't as clear as I would like it to have been.
Right.
But I found in Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 5, what seems to be a clearer association with Jesus as the branch. Jeremiah 23, verse 5 says, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth." It's nice. I've actually been in contact with him, not just by... I've met him, and I've been in contact with him in email, and I've actually sent him information that has helped him make a blog posting regarding sunspots and the composition of Jupiter. And I want to work with him more. He's apparently open to it, and he liked the information I sent, so he realizes that I'm serious and I'm not just trying to be an aggravation to him. But Mercury bearing down on Spica on that sixth day, the messenger of...
Yeah.
Mercury the messenger,
yep.
6 days later, something, those towers are brought down for a reason, and it's not just for, it's more than just, tearing them down and building it back up to make money. There's something spiritual to all this that is, these are things I want to know. I ask, please, God, show me. I want to know the truth. I want to know every bit of truth there is and every lie there is. It doesn't matter to me how distressful it is. You just have to learn to survive and then live with it. It's just Mercury heading towards Spica, and Spica being representative of Jesus.
All right.
In constellation Virgo.
All right. This is what's starting to form in my, poor brain. And that is, like everything else, and you have said this a couple of times, and I think the first I ever encountered it was in Genesis, wasn't it, with Joseph being imprisoned? And he said... Satan meant this for evil, but the Lord will turn it to good, more or less. Is that correct?
Yes, I don't remember the specific
right.
Verse.
But as we see in the heavens, and there's always references to battle in the heavens and all of creation actually bespeak everything. And that which also gives promise and hope to those who are faithful, those same signs are also used by the dark side for their own machinations, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still looking at the same things, God's creation, one which is used for good and one which is used for evil. So actually, it's the same basic storyline from Alpha to Omega, from the beginning to the end. There is the truth and there is the spinoff, which is what Satan does, the counterfeiter.
Yep.
Does that make any sense?
And I'm glad you mentioned Joseph because that's something I should mention too. Genesis chapter 37, Joseph is giving Jacob loves Joseph more than his, apparently that's presented. Jacob loves Joseph more than the others for whatever reason. Gives him the coat of many colors. And his brothers are jealous. His 11 brothers are jealous. Well, I guess at that point it would have been 10 of his brothers are extremely jealous. Benjamin wasn't the problem, right? Well, here you have, on the sixth day, our sun and our moon, and it is a brand new moon. You see the sun there, and you see the moon above it, but off to the above to the left at about the 10, 11 o'clock position, you see a little dark spot. It's a brand new moon. You don't even see a crescent. I just been wondering what this means.
All right, this is frame six?
This is six, September 17th.
All right, you talking about that dark spot, what looks like a dark spot that's a little bit up and to the left of the sun and the new moon.
Position.
What's that?
About 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock to the sun.
Okay, right. But it's actually lower, so it's almost like within inside the scope of the constellations. Is that correct?
Yes, the sun and and our moon on that sixth day are right there at the head of Virgo, near her crown.
All right.
And again, I didn't have the crown there. I've done it, and it makes a...
It's too busy?
It makes a mess.
Okay, it's all right. All right.
Because of all the red letters you have up there.
Okay, but that dark spot or hole, you could call it?
Well, I've just been wondering what it means. Yes, I'm wondering...
Gee.
I was wondering if this is a conjunction, but it's not that close a conjunction. At first I was thinking, what, is our sun and moon supposed to be in conjunction, supposed to be representing a 13th star? So was September 11th and September 17th a time of revolution? But then I got to thinking, no, that's not that close a conjunction. So then I was reading, I was thinking, and then I came across Genesis chapter 37, and Joseph is explaining his first dream is about the sheaves of wheat. That he's telling his brothers, your sheaves made obeisance to me. And then he mentions a second dream where he dreamed that the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And so here we have, on that sixth day, we have our sun and our moon. And Virgo has 12 stars, but there were, the 12 brothers. The other 11 stars, these are connections I'm trying to put together. I don't know exactly what to make of it. It just seems to be too coincidental to be a coincidence. Maybe I'm stretching it, but I know there's something to this sixth day.
We've referenced that dark hole. Gut feeling, maybe right or wrong now, doesn't matter. What is your gut feeling that is? What were you stricken with?
Well, I need to get back to it, but I'm thinking that possibly our moon is blotting out a particular star in the crown, or as a possibility, and then our sun is maybe, filling in the void and making a new. That's what I wonder. It's speculation at this point. And also keep in mind that the time it's an arbitrary time. All these times, the days are the exact days, but the times that I show are all arbitrary. And I've hidden, like this one's 12:56 p.m. New York City on September 17, 2001. Some of these are at night. Some of the images are from scenes at night, and some are from there in the day. I darken the sky. I chose to hide the daylight in every one to make
right. That makes sense.
More clear.
Sure.
So the moon and the sun, I should do this. I should go back through it. The moon and the sun at a particular point on that day could have been much, they would have been closer together. But I don't know if they would have been close enough to be considered a unit.
Right.
It's not an eclipse. It's not an eclipse moment. So that gets us up to 2001, and I could go on to the next one and just give you a brief teaser, not really explain much of anything, but to show you that all the Ackerman planets on slide 7 for July 4th, 1776.
All right, hold on.
Jupiter and Gemini, and all the Ackerman planets are, you would call this amassing.
Amassing, right?
Mars and Jupiter, this would be called amassing.
Right.
And but Jupiter being in Gemini, and I got some other information here that was, I reconfirmed this today because I'm looking at it now with Starry Night. I told you before that, 1776, Jupiter in Gemini, July 4th being the ceremonial date of our founding. I mean, it's, what would you call it, the ceremonial date, our declaration of
independence. Yeah.
The ceremonial date, July 4th, 1776. When you move forward to 1812, And I still don't have this detail straight, but whatever the British did here in 1812 reset a treaty. It did.
Yeah, you
reverted back to a previous treaty, am I right?
All right, if you're referring to what the informer shared, and that is when the belligerents reengage, it vitiates the prior treaty. So that would mean the Treaty of Paris, which ended the hostilities of the Revolutionary War, would be vitiated and replaced with, if I got this right, the treaty that was signed that ended the War of 1812, which was the Treaty of Ghent.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so go ahead. Yeah, you're right. A war between the belligerents, another war between the belligerents would vitiate the prior treaty between the belligerents.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now how does that factor in with this?
Well, it's just Jupiter being in Gemini in 1776 and Jupiter being in Gemini in 1812, there's another two more important dates that are, you know, big dates that are tied together by the Jupiter and Gemini deal.
All right, what you're showing us, though, in frame 7 is July 4th, 1776.
Yes, I didn't mean to, I don't even have one for 1812. I just thought I was throwing a teaser there for 1776.
Would you, but before you come on again, would you want to do one for the War of 1812?
Yeah, I can prepare another one because 1611 is involved in this as well, isn't it? Wasn't there some treaty or financial arrangement in 1611? I don't.
Well, that was a King James Bible.
But there was. You're saying there was no. I thought 1611 was involved in this. Somehow.
A political event? I'm not sure.
Okay.
Okay.
It may have been 16. You know, I'll just keep it to myself for now.
You mean something that the informant Montgomery talked about as far as...
Okay,
I have to take a look at that. I'll talk to James. Yeah, it could be. You're right.
Because 1611 is another Jupiter and Gemini year. And
but don't you find it interesting that is the year of the King James Bible?
Yeah, yep, I mean... these are reasons, further reasons why I'm not being snobby, or I just think that...